And we are live on a Sunday morning, 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk, and we are protecting military families with the one and only Chris Brochu of Brochu Law. Chris, how are we doing on a Sunday, up early and live?
Good morning, Casey. Doing great. Doing even better this morning. We're about to introduce our guest in a moment once we get through the usual, but our guest today is a former college football player and current Army officer, Josh Griffin. He's going to talk to us about how he went from enlisted to officer, some of the things that he's done and accomplished in his Army career, and also some of the most common pitfalls for our younger service members and how they can avoid them. So really excited about that. Just as a friendly reminder, as always, Brochu Law Second Opinion. If you have been told by either an organization, the VA, or somebody else that you're only entitled to X amount of military benefits, or you have a question about your legal rights or a question about your military benefits, anything at all related to your military family's rights or benefits, please feel free to give us an email, case@brochulaw.com. That's case@brochulaw.com. Or give us a call, 904-201-1771. Again, 904-201-1771. We're happy to take a look for you. If we find something that we believe you're leaving on the table and you and us decide to enter into a fee agreement, everything that we do for our military families and consumers is on a contingency fee basis. So we don't require any money up front. There's no fee unless you win. We advance all costs on behalf of military families and consumers. With that being said, let's introduce Josh Griffin. Josh, are you with us?
Yes, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. I know that it's 4:30 your time. You're out in Colorado, so I really appreciate you joining us. Tell us a bit about your service history. So you've been in the Army now, serving for 16 years?
Yes, that's right. So I first started off I enlisted in 2006. And from there, I served with the 160th Night Stalkers, ISOR. And then I spent the last moments of my enlisted side, meaning that I was from private to sergeant major. I was with the 10th Special Forces Group, wherein I actually joined the Green to Gold program with the Colorado State University to gain my degree. And here I stand, an officer.
Now, I don't want to I don't want to jump the gun, but you're also the oldest ever Division I college football player, right?
Yeah, that's what they tell me.
What year did you join the CSU football team?
I believe I was 32 years old when I actually stepped onto the field. Yeah.
I bet you're in better shape than half the team, right? Running with all those young bucks.
I would say so. Yeah, I'm going to say yes to that.
And Josh, with all of your experience in the Army, how many deployments do you have?
We're sitting there anywhere from 16 to 18.
Wow. And what deployment or combat zones have you been to?
So the nature of our business was very of a clandestine nature.
I'm not asking you for anything, you know, secretive or confidential. Just the places that you're allowed to tell us.
Right. Yeah. So you have your average deployments, which was Afghanistan, Iraq, and then you had a few other skirmishes throughout the globe.
Wow. And tell us, so what happens for any of our listeners that are either enlisted, that are thinking about going officer, or maybe we have some listeners that are veterans. I know a lot of our listeners are veterans and some of their kids are in the military. What's one thing that an enlisted service member can do if they're looking to go, you know, the officer track or do kind of what you did? How could they follow in your footsteps?
Well, one of the biggest things in the military, and I would even say in life, is to ensure that one has all the opportunities or is available for all the opportunities that is provided. And in the military, especially in the Army, it's a very unique egalitarian system to where if you work hard, if you put effort into it, you 9 times out of 10 will have the opportunity. So keep your nose clean, stay in shape, be brave enough to do something outside of your wheelhouse, and you will find yourself sitting at 3, 10 years in, and you can have the choice of staying enlisted, going the warrant officer route, or becoming a commissioned officer.
Now, Josh, did you start or did you join the military right after high school?
No, actually. So I had a football scholarship where I went to the University of Houston, tore my hamstring, and I already knew either I was going to be in the NFL or I was going to be in the Army. And during that time in my life, I just felt that call because, you know, I come from a military family, and when I tore my hamstring, it just felt like God was telling me, hey, man, go do what you know you're supposed to do. And then when I went out of college and enlisted into the Army.
Wow. And what branches are your military family? What branches are they in? What do they do for work?
Yeah. So I'm an Army family, from the Buffalo Soldiers, Tuskegee Airmen, to me now. There has never been a time of war where somebody in my family, no, my family has not been in combat.
And you've got a big family too, right? 6 or 7 siblings?
Yeah. My parents, they love each other. Yeah, so seven kids total.
And what happened? So you enlisted in the Army. What happened from there? So did you decide to go Special Forces? Did they select you? How does that process work for any of our listeners that are interested in going that route?
Yeah, so for one, I will clear up that Special Forces, a lot of people not in the community will all gather us up into Special Forces. And there's only one group of those, right? Those are the Green Berets. But whether you're a Navy SEAL, Ranger, Night Stalker, PJ, CCT, we're all in the JSOC, the Special Operations. So the better terminology would be Special Operations or Special Operator. But to get back to your question, so when I was in advanced individual training at Fort Gordon as a communication specialist, honestly, they took the top percent, and what they would do is certain members of different groups would just come in and look, and it's almost like that, like selection before the selection, right? They bring you in, try to get you, you know, understand you as a person, because not necessarily your rank that they're looking at, it's your personality and how will it fit into that community. So went there, went to Fort Benning, Georgia, went through the Ranger induction program, where I stayed there for a little bit of time with the 75th, and then from there, there was an opportunity for a few of us that were 94 Echoes that were needed in 160. So I volunteered there at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, where I assessed with the Green Platoon and became a Night Stalker.
Wow. And then following your service, how did you get back into CSU, or what led you into returning back?
It was odd. I was a E6 at the time, and I was getting burnt out. I was thinking about just getting out the Army, and then I was like, well, let me go ahead and finish my degree. And then I was introduced to a program called the Green to Go Active Duty Option, and this is all for all active duty members, where you keep your rank in your pay, and you go to whatever college you want to go that will accept you, of course. And you go there for about 2 years, get your degree, and then transition from enlisted to officer.
And is that approximately the same length of time that it took you?
Less and more, yeah. So I already had a lot of college already. So I took the opportunities while I was at CSU to do other stuff, you know, like get involved into the political sphere in Colorado. Focused more, so my degree was in philosophy, but it was focused on science, so it was a little bit of philosophy and physics, you know.
Wow.
So which, yeah, that was actually a very interesting degree set, but yeah, that's pretty much what I did.
Now, I need you to break it down for a civilian, non, you know, service member like myself. When you go from enlisted to officer, do you now go back as a night stalker and join back as an officer, or are you now in a different job? Like, what's the movement once you get out of CSU?
Totally different person. So the Army sees you, knows you as sergeant or whatever, enlisted rank X. Once you transfer over from enlisted to commission, you actually get a DD-214 that shows that your contract is now expired as an enlisted, and then you come in as an officer. So whether it was whatever group you belong to, if you were in special operations, you would have to assess again, because you have to remember, when you went through, they taught you what you needed to be successful as an enlisted personnel in that environment. Now they need you to learn what it needs to be successful as an officer, which is a whole different set of skills that you need as an officer. Not necessarily when you get to the upper ranks of like sergeant first class, even sometimes the staff sergeant level, but they want you to become the best officer. And what I've learned in my career is, once I made officer, I had to put away the NCO in me, because I would inevitably step on my NCO's toes. So you have to understand that. You also understand that you're changing your cloak, as it were. You're becoming a new person. So you have to be a little bit more fluid.
That's an excellent explanation for a layman like myself, because I think a lot of times, you know, the military is like its own language, but the way you described it, you know, the DD-214 is sort of the end of that chapter, if you will, and then you reopen a new chapter as an officer. So that makes complete sense that you would have to sort of retrain, if you will, or go back through the progressions to learn it as an officer instead of your enlisted track. And Josh, so right now, 16 years in, is that correct? And what's your ultimate goal? Are you how many more years do you have left?
Well, technically 4, but I just recently, in January, had major spinal surgery. So my years of kicking down doors and pouring down lead, as it were, are over. My ultimate goal, honestly, is to get out and run for a political office, whether it be Congress or Senate.
Wow. Well, given your background and your service history, I've got no doubt in my mind that you're going to get there. I mean, holy smokes, you've accomplished more than most of us. What is it that you're so passionate about that makes you kind of get out of bed in the morning? I know you and I have talked about this, but you're starting a nonprofit. You have a nonprofit that's going to help our service members and military families.
Yes, and thanks for mentioning that. So the nonprofit that we are starting, we're actually going to officially come out in October. It's called Gruntworks, and it's pretty much one of the problems that we have in the military is that we are not thoroughly educated on what we need to be to accomplish before we retire. We hear the old wives' tales and the horror stories about the VA, about not having a college degree, but the only time that we are really faced with those facts is when we're going through the retirement process. And I can say that because it was like last week when I'm sitting in the VA benefits meeting, and everything that they told me, it would have been better for me to know day one into the military. And so this is what we're doing. We're grabbing, you know, law firms, other non-for-profits, and we really want to start focusing on the active duty members and start teaching them what they need to know, so when they become veterans, they're already SMEs, subject matter experts.
So by the time that someone gets out of the military and they are, rejoining the civilian world, not only do they know what benefits are available to them from their military service, but they are better able to move back into civilian life.
Roger. So like TSGLI, understanding that if you get injured, you're actually have an opportunity to get a huge lump sum to pay for your medical bills and whatever substantial finances that you've suffered during an injury, you know, logging in all your injuries, understanding credit and how to get a house, even as a private, and understanding the utility of living below your means. All these things that we're not really taught as an early soldier, but then once we get to the ranks of sergeant, staff sergeant, we start hearing the guys that are getting ready to retire, and they start telling us these horror stories and nightmares that they're going through, and it's starting to become more real to us. So if we can get that when they're 18, 19, by the time they're 29, 39, they'll be better equipped.
Absolutely. I think one of the main issues that you and I talked about on a previous discussion that we both agree with, and we're both trying to carve a path forward, and you and I are working in the same direction on this, is trying to inform our younger service members about their rights, especially as they have to do with sort of some of these lending agreements and personal loans and things like that, because the military obviously requires its service members to, you know, make good on any of their debts that they have, right? You've got a duty to pay your debts. You can't default on any of that. And I think that's where some of these predatory and abusive companies come in, is they see military families as a payday, right? Because they can get them in to any of these usurious or abusive or predatory loans. And what happens? It doesn't matter how unlawful the agreement is. The service member military family knows, well, man, I got to pay this or I'm going to get in trouble with my branch of service, right? Have you experienced that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. Go to any military base and you will see it right outside the gate. Buy here, pay here, buy here. You know, I'm not going to name drop some of these institutions, but there are a plethora of institutions out there that will focus only military. Hey, low credit, bad credit, we got you. Doesn't worry about it. And then what they'll do, they'll tell you, hey, in order for you to get this loan, we either need you to do an allotment or we need you to make a down payment on a loan that we're already getting you. So even though we won't tell you that you specifically have to make an allotment, we will put it in some kind of regards to where you're forced to do so in order to get a lower percentage rate or anything like that. So, I mean, I can tell you right now from personal experience as a specialist struggling with his own finances, yeah, it was really easy for me to go into one of those loan shark places and get a loan. That way I didn't have to tell my leadership, hey, I need an AER loan, or commander, I can't afford this because X, Y, and Z. There's a little bit of trepidation in the military when it comes to not being able to take care of your household.
And we're going to talk about this more after the top of the hour break, folks. So we're not going to leave this issue hanging. This is one of the one of the main reasons that Josh and I started talking, was now that Josh is in his capacity as an officer and he's got all of these younger enlisted service members under him, and he's sort of teaching them some of these lessons that he's learned along the way. This is a big problem, and it's a problem that we all need to be aware of. We all need to be on the lookout. We need to hold these companies accountable. One of the things that Josh and I were talking about is this requirement for a mandatory allotment. And obviously, for those of you that served, you know what allotment is. For the civilians listening, just imagine, you know, your pre-tax dollars coming out of your paycheck, right, going to your 401k or to Uncle Sam. Well, I guess after you know, some of those pre-tax, you get taxed and you get your paycheck. But the allotment, it works similar to that, where, you know, you sign up for this personal loan and they require allotment. So before the service member gets their paycheck, this lender, you know, gets their, monthly payment or whatever it is. And the main issue with that is some of the times the interest rate is unlawful. The fees, right, especially the late fees, are unlawful, and the entire personal loan does not conform to this federal law called the Military Lending Act. So if you ever have a question about a loan that you're in as a service member, and again, this doesn't apply to veterans. This only applies to service members and certain dependents, right? So our military families that are still, you know, majority active duty. But it is important. And one of the ways that you can find out if a company is violating that, send the contract that you're in to an attorney. And what I do is I review it for free, and we figure out if the agreement that you entered into conforms to the Military Lending Act. If it does, well, now you know. If it does not, then we'll see if there's something that we can do about it. And that's sort of what Josh and I are both, that's sort of what we've been talking about and what Josh is passionate about as well. And Josh, do you have any other sort of tips that before we get to break that you could give to some of our younger service members, whether it be financial advice or training advice or how to get that job in the military that they've always wanted, but they, you know, feel might be out of reach. Can you give any advice on that?
Yeah, I'm going to try to be a little bit short because I know we're coming up on break. Understand that yesterday won't be today. Today won't be tomorrow, and tomorrow won't be forever. Don't be so short-minded and so short-sighted. Understand that your best days are coming if you work on your hard days today. That's the best way I can say it.
And as far as, I know we've got, you know, another 30 seconds here. As far as physical fitness goes, what's the best way to get in shape fast and maintain that hunger?
Limit your alcohol consumption, work out outside of PT hours, and just love your body because you only get one.
Excellent, excellent advice. Truly inspiring. We've got Josh Griffin here with us for the remainder of today's episode. Casey's going to take us to break, but if you have a legal question, please send it to us. If you have a question about your military benefits, case@broshulaw.com.
Case@broshulaw.com. That's how you can get in contact with them, or 904-201-1771. We do hit a break, but stick with us. We got a lot more to do with Chris Broshue and with Joshua Griffin. They were giving you all the good information in the first hour, half hour of the show. If you want to go back and listen, WOKV.com, or a video version of the show on Chris's website, thanks to Justin at Nova Productions. So look and listen to all of those resources, a lot of other resources on Chris's website that are valuable as well. Stick with us, though. More to do on the other side of the break. We are protecting military families on 104.5 WOKV. Jacksonville's News and Talk. We'll be right back. And we are back on a Sunday morning, 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. The 7 o'clock hour on a Sunday morning, but we are still protecting military families with the one and only Chris Broshue. Chris, good first half hour. A lot more to do, though. A lot of good information with your guest, Joshua Griffin. We'll get back into that in just one second, but before we do that, we want Chris to tell you about a second opinion. I want to tell you about a video version of the show. You can find it on Chris's website, broshulaw.com. Whole lot of good information on the website, but the video version of the show as well. You can see me and Chris sitting here doing the show as we do every week, and you can find it again on his website, thanks to Justin at Nova Productions. But Chris, the second opinion, tell the people about it if they're just jumping in the 7 o'clock hour.
Sure thing. We also have it available on YouTube if you prefer to watch using that method. Second opinion, if you've got a question about your SGLI, VGLI, TSGLI, any of the military life insurance, we do all of that. VA disability, Camp Lejeune, obviously. We've had several episodes on that. If you have a question about Camp Lejeune, if you serve there 53 to 87 and you have an illness or you have a loved one that did, feel free to give us a call. We're happy to speak with you. Any VA disability appeals, and then also what we're talking about today, Military Lending Act. If you have a question about your military rights or benefits, or you don't think that you are maximizing them, you've got a question about them, somebody told you that you're only entitled to 10% VA disability or something like that, give us a call. We're happy to screen it. Our consultation is always free. If we discover something that we think you can apply for or file a claim for or file a lawsuit for, we'll let you know. If we decide to work together, we will enter into a fee agreement. There are no upfront costs. We advance all costs on behalf of military families and consumers. and there's no fee unless you win. So we do everything on a contingency fee basis for our military families and consumers. Today we have Josh Griffin, 16-year Army officer, former Division I college football player, and the one of the founders of Gruntworks, a nonprofit to help our military families. Josh, good morning again.
Yes.
Still with us?
Good morning. Yes, sir.
Excellent. So I know before the break, we were talking about a number of different things, your background, how to go from enlisted to officer, your experience, some of the things that you learned throughout your time in the military. And I want to really get back to that. So if you could just tell the listeners, what are some of the things that you you teach some of our younger enlisted now that you're an officer or have learned through experience some of these common pitfalls of our younger service members?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that I try to relate to all my junior enlisted is the pitfalls of living above your means, to rushing life. You know, a lot of them, majority of the enlisted personnel don't come from families of great wealth. So when they get this, I don't want to say huge sums of money, but sums of money, it's more than they've probably had the majority of their life. And so they go out and get the expensive cars, they go out there and get all the fancy clothes, and pretty much they go there and drown themselves in liabilities. And so I really tried to teach them the difference between assets and liabilities.
And that makes sense considering your background, right? I mean, you've got a finance background.
Well, through trial and error, I would say a finance background, you know, because I was one of those junior Joes out there that saw that nice, what was it, Camaro that just came out back in 2006 or 7, whatever it was, and came back from had a deployment, had $40,000 in my pocket, and I was like, hey, I can afford this $3,000 down payment with, what was it, 22% interest, and oh, guess what, we have a gap insurance on it as well, and I'm thinking I got a good deal, and no, not at all.
And I was thinking from your time at CSU, I thought you said your philosophy and finance. But no, the practical experience, I want you to tell every story you can, because I think the more information we share, the more people know about their legal rights, the more people can be aware of it and not fall into the traps of some of these abusive and predatory companies. So I really appreciate you talking about some of these things, and I know our listeners do too. What are some of your experiences? So you talked about one, you know, the high interest rate on the, you know, car payment, the you know, obviously high car payment. What are some of the other ones? Any experience with any of your enlisted service members with personal loans or predatory lending?
Oh, man, there's so many to think about. I remember one soldier I had, he got a car from one of those auto loan places right outside the post. And what they did, they fixed the vehicle just enough to where it could run perfectly for like 5 miles. And as soon as he got it off the lot, the car just broke down on him. And he kept continuing trying to trade in his car. And he ended up having like a 2019, I think it's a Jeep Cherokee, 24% interest rate on his car. They didn't even check his credit. I believe it was like one of those, like, hey, we don't need to check credit, everybody approved here. And he just got an astronomical debt before he could even enjoy his vehicle, which drove his credit score down. And I think one thing that, you know, I would like to talk about is that the reason why I'm willing to share my story is because there's a level of shame that goes with debt, and particularly in the military, because you entrust us with the nation's secrets and security, but we can't handle our own household. It kind of has a negative connotation within the command and around your peers, where you want to keep your professional life and personal life separate. But we all know that is impossible, whether you're civilian or military. And I think the more of us that can sit up and or stand up and say that, hey, look, I was a victim. I, because of my ignorance, I was put in adverse conditions financially. I think more people will be more beholden to not only stand up together, but also take the charge and start fighting back at some of these institutions.
No, I love the thought, because teaching some of the most common pitfalls or some of the things that you would avoid if you could go back and do it over, it's crucial to learning. And I think that as leadership, and obviously you're a leader in our military, I think it's vital that you pass that information along. And even like you're doing now, you know, fighting for it and not hiding from it or not being ashamed of it, but taking it head on, it is super admirable. And I think that we could all kind of learn from that, because I get a lot of calls about different military benefits or different military rights, and you know, people that have gotten, you know, 0% on a VA disability appeal, or they get their TSGLI denied, or they've got some other military benefit. And, you know, I wish that every single one of the military families that listen to this or that I speak with were, you know, going to move forward and going to put up a fight for what they're owed, because of the fact that the more people that fight, the better it gets, right? So the more people that know this information, the less that will fall victim or prey to these tactics that they come, you know, find out later down the road. So not only can we avoid these bad actors and unlawful companies on the front end, but if somebody is victim to one of these predatory loans, well, here's how you get out of it, right? Because we know that once you're in one of these loans, I mean, it's seemingly impossible to get out of, right?
Right. It's in once again, we're talking about knowledge, you know, versus ignorance. And one of the things that we were taught, or we already automatically knew when we first joined the military, is that, hey, if you had any kind of loan before you joined the military, you know, you can go back and get a note from the JAG office or the legal system in the military and present it to whatever institution, and they have to drop that down to 6% interest. But something that's always plagued me was, majority of people who join the military are 18 years old, 18, let's just say 17 to 21. How many of those people have loans? So really, how does that clause in the MLA really affect them? Now, if you was to say, hey, look, you're in the military, and you can only charge somebody up to, let's say, 10% interest on a loan, we wouldn't see half the problems that we see today. I mean, we're just talking about, you know, with the electronic service provisions. I never knew. I am 34. I was 35 years old when I learned anything about the Electronic Funds Transfer Act that prohibits against using electronic fund transfers. Didn't know it, and I think I'm a kind of knowledgeable guy. And so this is the things that I want, what we want to implore to all of our service members, veterans alike.
And Josh, I just want to get the listeners up to speed. What Josh is talking about is there are certain federal laws out there that prohibit mandatory allotment for our service members, and they also prohibit mandatory automatic debit, right? So mandatory electronic transfer from a checking account as a requirement to entering into a personal loan, you know, as consumer credit, right? So you can't as a term of consumer credit require a service member or veteran or even civilians in some instances under one of these federal loans. You cannot require allotment, and you cannot require automatic debit transfer. Now, some loans give you the option, right? You can pay check, you can pay credit card, you can pay however. But if you ever see a loan that requires mandatory allotment or requires electronic transfer, just like Casey and I always say, red flag, red flag, red flag. And if you find that you're already in one of those loans and you're like, oh my God, Chris, what do I do? Give me a call. Let's chat it out. Let's take a look. Some of these loans will allow us to file a lawsuit under the Military Lending Act if we decide to file a lawsuit, what we can do is we file the lawsuit. If we are successful, the loan is canceled. You would get premiums back to the inception date, so the date that you started, right, and all the premiums that you paid. You'd get all of that back. Plus, there are potential statutory awards, potential punitive damages, and the at-fault party, that bad actor, that bad company, they could be required to have to pay for your attorney's fees and costs. So huge, huge way for military families to strike back at some of these bad companies. Josh, what things, I know we've talked about TSGLI too. What things about TSGLI, I know I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent, but just so our listeners know, October 7th, 2001 to present day, anybody that's injured in a traumatic event on duty or off duty that suffers a qualifying loss, when I say qualifying loss, I'm talking about an injury, right? Mm-hmm. Do our service members know about TSGLI? And if not, what can you tell them, or what guidance would you give them?
No, I can tell you right now, I only spoke to one person that knew about the TSGLI. And
who's that, me?
No, you're the first civilian, I will say.
Just kidding.
No, quite honestly. But yeah, so TSGLI, people get confused because it's the T, right? So the SGLI is pretty much our life insurance policy. If you, Lord forbid, if you die, then you will get up to your $400,000 sent to your family. We all know that. But what we don't know is, like, what happens to that money if you can go through the entire military, your 20 years or whatever you do, get out? Well, that's just money that you didn't use. The Army didn't use. So what the Army has done is they created another policy that's called a traumatic SGLI. So if you have, like, an appendage, you traumatic injury, whether you lost one of your limbs, or even that you got hospitalized for X amount of days, or
right,
you needed 15 days, or you needed ADL, assistant daily living, where that means somebody helping you commute, transfer, eat, bathe. There's certain different, I think there's five factors in the ADL, that if you need it up to 120 days, you'll actually get $100,000 tax-free. And it's worked in increments of, I want to say, correct me if I'm wrong, 30 days is $25,000. So each 30 days equals $25,000.
That's correct. So for ADL loss, folks, six ADLs recognized under the statute: bathing, dressing, eating, toileting, transferring, and continence, right? And if you require assistance being physical, standby, or verbal assistance for two or more ADLs for a period of 30 days, you may be entitled to $25,000. For every 30 days, right, 30, 60, 90, 120, you'd be entitled to $25,000, up to $100,000 per claim. So that's what Josh is talking about, the TSGLI. And one of the biggest things too, Josh, is TSGLI is coming directly out of your LES statement. So when we talk about allotments, SGLI is a perfect example. $29 a month taken out of your paycheck. 28 of those dollars is going to SGLI, right? Service Member Group Life Insurance. Friendly reminder, all, you know, TSGLI, SGLI, VGLI, the administrator is Prudential, second largest group life insurance in the country. First largest is Federal Employee Group Life Insurance. That's administered by MetLife. But TSGLI, $28 going to Service Member Group Life Insurance, $1 going to this traumatic injury rider. Think the civilian version of TSGLI is an accidental death and dismemberment policy. So that's the sort of gist of TSGLI, but you're exactly right. Injuries related to physical bodily harm, and TSGLI would allow for traumatic brain injury related to either inpatient hospitalization or inability to perform activities of daily living. So you are hitting all the right notes here. The other one that I wanted to talk to you too, Josh, is isn't there something about, couldn't you get your security clearance stripped if you don't pay your bills? Am I off on that?
No, you're not. I mean, it can vary from debt. amount of speeding tickets you can get. Getting married to somebody that's a foreign national, your security clearance can get stripped from you from a lot of multiple reasons. One of the biggest ones that we see is financial reasons.
So, just to clarify, it would be a reason that some of these companies know that and kind of want to give credit or loans to personal loans to our military families because they know, hey, this guy is gonna have to pay back this loan, even if it is bogus, because if they don't, their family's gonna starve because they're gonna get their security clearance stripped and they're gonna be in a new job, right? I mean, they're not gonna probably be able to maintain their job or pay if they lose that clearance, right?
Yeah, it's also the psychological makeup of a active duty member or vet that makes them easily targeted by some of these people because, you know, we are natural servants and we're really good at taking one on the chin. Even besides the security clearance, you have to think about this too. We are entrusted with lives on the battlefield, even off the battlefield, so such potential like logistics or anything like that. If I can't trust you to take care of your bills at home, how can I trust you to take care of something in your organization that's worth a few hundred million dollars? And so that negative connotation, that desire to want to hide or shame away from needing help. I mean, veterans, we probably the biggest group that are easily ready to deny help for self. And this is why they target us. So it's a very, very evil and nefarious motive behind giving veterans and active duty members these types of loans.
I agree with you. I'm not going to mince words here. Any company that does this type of stuff to veterans, complete scum and need to be held accountable. And frankly, that's why I love doing what I do, right? I can't imagine a better client than somebody that has sacrificed for our country, right? And these companies that take advantage of that, it's just disgusting. But Josh, before we wrap up today's episode, I know you've got political aspirations. I know you've got some really good ideas. Can you walk me through any legislation that you have or that you like, what would you do if you could fix some of these things or what would you do to make our country better for our military families? Any legislation, any ideas that you have?
Oh man, where I begin? I think the one of the biggest things that we could do is number one, have a better internal financial institution. And we have USA, USAA. We also have maybe federal. But if every branch or collective, with all the branches, had their own internal finance institution, to where you don't have to go to outside these sharks, to where not necessarily do you need a credit to be shown, but you need to say, hey, look, I've been in for X amount of years, I can pay this my loan, this is their rank. That would help out a lot. And also pay the service members more. Because I mean, if you were an E5, which is a sergeant in whatever branch of service that you're in, if you account the hours that they work, they get paid under minimum wage. We're looking at $12 to $13 an hour. And even Congress, there was a proposed bill to increase our pay to 12.6% to combat the inflation. They knocked that down easily and went back down to 4.6 or 4.5. And so my question is how can you expect these people to protect, die for their country if you're not willing to spend money on them? We hear so many times people are saying that we would rather spend money on immigrants coming in, give them $300, $400, which may never happen. But yet you have veterans, inactive duty service members right now, they're not living from paycheck to paycheck. They're eating from meal to meal. And that's a shame.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, again, I'm not going to, you know, comment on where some of these federal dollars are going. But one of the things I will comment on is that they're denying what I see is fundamental rights to our military families, fundamental benefits, right? I mean, if inflation's 9.5% and you give somebody a 4% raise, well, they just took a 5% hit, right? I mean, this is, it's kind of a joke that you know, these things take so long to pass into law because of the fact that we've got military families that are you know, just sacrificing everything for our country, and they should be provided these basic rights, and we're willing to give it out to everybody else, but for some reason, and I think it's because our military, you know, like you said, they take one on the chin. But I think we are we're getting close to wrapping it up here today, Josh, but I just want to thank you so much for joining the show. As always, pleasure chatting with you, and thank you for your service to our country.
Thank you for having us, and thank you for helping the veterans.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Casey, I don't know. We're probably getting close here, but as always, great chatting with you.
Yeah, absolutely. We thank Josh for coming on as well. And just, Chris, obviously you thanked him, but us at WOKV, we're going to thank him as well for his service. We appreciate him getting up early, because I'm pretty sure it's early in Colorado right now, Chris.
Yeah, Colorado. I mean, I'm not a mathematician, but I think it's 4:30. Well, maybe 5:30 now. But
yeah, either way, he got up earlier than us today, Chris.
Way earlier.
But at the end of the day, we're back next week protecting military families for Chris Brochu. Check out a video version of the show thanks to Justin and Nova Productions. I'm Casey Kurtz. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.